Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy you're actually getting a podcast week.
Yeah, you're actually getting a podcast week. We got a late night edition. We are chatting directly after the Syracuse loss to Georgia Tech, something I kind of saw coming. Nobody else really seemed to be on board with it.
We don't play well away from the dome.
Ever.
And, ever, the last couple of years especially, and we have decided that we want to make potentially making the tournament as painful and difficult a process as possible by being a mixed bag against every team in our, like, general area of the world in the ACC, and below us, except for Boston College.
Except for Boston College, for some reason. Yeah, I do feel like, in general, this team feels like it's on more stable footing than last year's from a resume standpoint, but I feel like from an actual play standpoint, I do feel like every single game is kind of this, like, adventure and, like, how are we going to mess this up in the most explosive way possible. But, like, we're still close enough in every game that it just drives you up a wall.
Yeah, and it's weird. This isn't even, like, the, like, class. I mean, it's class at Syracuse in a lot of ways. Like, before we started recording, we talked about Frank Howard, the ball going off of his foot. Luckily, his foot didn't actually come off because that's, like, you know, that would fit in pretty well with the injury concerns of the rest of the team. You know, just dumb mistakes down the stretch. We actually hit our free throws, if I remember correctly. I think we were, like, really good from the line, which is a fun, different variation on how to lose these teams. From the field, we only shot 30%, so, you know, you can be perfect from the line, and if you're only making 15 to 50 shots, and even though we had a nice, like, a pretty stalwart defensive effort, when your opponent gets, you know, 13 more shots than you because you have, you know, 15 turnovers, and it's just not great. So it's funny because, like, we won a lot of the, like, little battles that we usually can point to in terms of you know, Syracuse's success. We held Georgia Tech to literally the exact same poor three-point percentage as us. They got to the line only 12 times and only hit, you know, two-thirds of those. We out-rebounded them slightly. They had more offensive boards, but we had a 40-38 edge overall. But we turned the ball over a lot. They blocked us, I think, I feel like Georgia Tech, for whatever reason, like, whenever we play them, they rack up blocks. I could be making that up, but that seems like a thing that's in my head.
Yeah, I'd have to look that up to see the veracity there. But it sounds right, just because Lammers
it feels
pretty
right.
Good.
Yes. And also, once again, like, assists. Like, we just, ball movement is not at a premium.
No.
And a lot of that's just the fact that we don't have guys who really store on the inside, and we don't have, you know, great drum shim shooters either. So, like, our you know, best mode of scoring is to take the ball to the hoop, and that means a lot of one-on-one plays. So the assist numbers haven't been good all year, and once again, we were up 9, I think, for this team. So pretty ugly basketball overall. And it's funny because, like, occasionally this team puts together a fun game to play, but there are other nights where it's just a chore to watch them.
The thing is, like, you know, we deride Virginia's style of play, but at least, like, Virginia is efficient on both ends, and at least, like, you know that they're going to be able to come up with that big defensive stop more often than not. For Syracuse, you see very, very, you know, short flashes of quality play on offense, but by and large, like, it's a very inefficient offense that plays slow. To me, if you're going to play inefficient offense, play fast. You know, it goes, you know, the same principles that kind of guide the football team. Like, until you're going to be play efficiently, until you're going to be good on the offensive end, you might as well maximize your possessions and, you know, try to speed up the game and score as much as possible, because, like, this team can't really hit shots at a reasonable clip. And no, you're not always going to shoot 30%, but even if you shoot, you know, between 37 and 42%, maximizing possessions probably gets you a win in a game like this, especially when Georgia Tech, you know, while they did some things right, they largely tried to give this game away for most of the second half.
Yeah, that's a big difference between, like, us and Virginia. Like, their very deliberate pace is kind of a feature more than a bug, and they are pretty, I mean, this whole run with them has been pretty impressively efficient on the offensive end. They're right now number 38 in Pomeroy's adjusted offensive efficiency, while they are 351st in tempo. While we are 130, actually, I thought we'd be worse. I thought we'd be worse in offense. We are 131st.
Which, like, makes no sense to me. Like, none.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense at all. We're actually 8th in defense, which is better than I thought. I knew we'd been good. This team's a really good defensive team. This is the best defensive team we've had in like 2 or 3 years, which is unfortunate because, I mean, it's unfortunate that we're kind of wasting a pretty good effort by having a very stagnant offense. And like 131st really does not feel like anywhere near as bad as we actually are. The only team ahead of us, like there's no team ahead of us in overall Pomeroy rankings that is worse on offense. The next team that we finally, so we were 49th overall, and you have to go down to 68 Mississippi State, who are 160th in offense and 12th in defense. So, like, our offense is, like, pretty much a sore thumb. And we are 343rd in tempo, which is actually just slightly ahead of Virginia.
Oh, good.
So, but we actually play them pretty well, so, it, like, it's weird. Like, it seems like we'd be playing right into their hands, and instead, like, we actually play them tough. So, I don't know.
Well, because we figured out the one thing that they can't really deal with, and, like, Louisville's figured that out a little bit. West Virginia figures that out every time they play. Virginia just can't handle when you press them into doing things they don't want to do. And, like, it's not that other teams don't have the athletes to do it. I think most of the ACC actually has the athletes to do it. It's just that I feel like Jim Boeheim's abilities as a defensive coach are what puts SU kind of in a different echelon in terms of what they're how they're able to frustrate Virginia. And Huggins does the same thing, you know, with West Virginia.
Yeah. It's just... It's tough because I think we're kind of stuck in a, like, there's no way with this roster to really change how, I mean, you could say we could move the ball better, but like we're kind of in a tough position with the roster as it is constructed because we have so few guards, we have so few scoring options.
Even
beyond
fewer
three.
Guards now.
Now we have literally we are at the fewest possible guards. Did we have any walk-ons actually play tonight?
No.
No, we didn't. We played 7. Yeah. And Moyer only played 2 minutes.
Yeah, Moyer was in two minutes, which is weird. And then Bayer didn't play, which, like, fine, I guess. But I feel like we're going to have to see him on the floor at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, like, unlikely that our three backcourt players are going to go full games without getting in any foul trouble. So we probably will have to see him at some point. Which, you know, lovely. It's been a couple years since we needed to, like, see walk-ons in legitimate playing time, but we're back.
I really think that we need to give Jamal Custis a call.
Yeah, what are you doing for this semester, Jamal?
I mean, he did come in as someone who thought about playing basketball. It was a conversation that was had when he joined the team. I don't think it's the worst idea at this point. I feel like we're in much more desperate straits than we were when Mike Williams was on the team, like for that brief stretch. Actually, that might have been even before you were there. Yeah, that was, I think, like the year before you got there when Mike Williams was briefly on the team and scored like 10 points.
I was there when we had a lacrosse player on the team. Who was it? He was good. I'm blanking. Kevin something?
Yeah, I don't have a last name like off the top of my head.
I'll come up with it.
But yeah, I think it might be time to tap into the football team since we have a lot of like kind of big, fast receivers. Might not be the worst idea to plug one of them in just as a stopgap measure. He might not even have to play. Just think it'd be, I think it would be ideal to have at least a little more depth. It's not that the walk-ons are bad. It's that I'd rather not use them if we can avoid it, because if we're dipping into the walk-on pool with the schedule we have left, you know, right now I'd only feel comfortable. I wouldn't feel comfortable claiming any of these as sure wins. I feel comfortable giving us wins against Boston College and Wake, but like we arguably have to go 5-4 in this, you know, late stretch if we have any chance of making the tournament. And of those 5 wins we'd probably need, I'd say 1 or 2 probably need to be on the road. And that road slate, for those who don't have it in front of them like I do, Louisville, Miami, Duke, Boston College. All those are difficult. Duke's obviously the toughest one. I think Miami's feasible, if only because of their own injuries. But yeah, this is a perilous stretch as we you know, kind of look at what should be another bubble-filled February and March now.
Yeah, I'm actually like, this game is frustrating. I'm like not too overly freaking out about the upcoming stretch. UVA, like, I feel like we've had these big home wins the last couple of years, even when we haven't been good.
Right.
We've notched like a big signature home win, And we were so close to beating UVA in Charlottesville, despite the fact that they're very good. They're number two in the country, and honestly, I think they should be getting more love at number one. It wouldn't totally shock me if we beat them at the Dome. Obviously, we've played them tough for like 3 years now. Louisville, I'm interested to see how that game plays out, considering Pitino's no longer there. They have a new coach, and coaching against the zone to the level that Pitino always did is way easier said than done. So I'm interested to see how Padgett handles that in his first matchup with Boeheim. And that team is just not great. They're kind of a mess. They're talented, but they're definitely in a better spot than us, but they're, you know, kind of all over the place. We need to beat Wake. We should probably beat NC State at home. Like you said, Miami is vulnerable. Obviously, that's tough. It's a nooner on the road, which is tough. But they've had their own injury issues. And then later on in the year, obviously UNC and Duke are, you know, I'm not going to put all my eggs in those baskets, although, you know, we could beat UNC at home. But getting that win at BC is huge. Like, that's obviously the easiest road game we have left by a large margin, and you need to pick up at least something on the road.
Right.
And we've had, you know, we had the UVA game and the Florida State game and the Wake game that were all very close. Those are all very tough. If we could have swung one or two of those, we'd be in much better shape. It also hurts, it's weird to say, it hurts that Buffalo lost last night to Kent State.
Our best win.
RPI-wise, which is a dumb metric that shouldn't have as much weight as it does, is our best win, or was our best win. I don't know if they still are. And based on this, like, quadrant thing that the NCAA is apparently, I think it's new for this year, right? I don't remember ever hearing about it before this year.
Yeah, they're, like, sticking to it in a way that, like, they've always kind of considered it, but now it's, like, a public, like, things need to happen this way.
I kind of appreciate it in terms of, like, it makes it easier to kind of track what is important and what isn't, but, like, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of time. I mean, I'm sure that they're not just looking at that, but it seems it's kind of weirdly context-free in terms of, like, how the games went. You could lose by 3 or lose by 30 to UVA, and it seems like it all fits into the same bubble.
That sounds like college sports.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't know that margin of victory is, like, everything, but I think there's a difference between a team that, like, really held its own against a bunch of ranked opponents and couldn't quite pull one out versus a team that, like, picked off one and then got blown out by 4 others. So,
right.
You know, I don't think it's going to be everything, but if it is a huge factor that is now public, Buffalo probably falling out of, like, that quadrant one win, quote-unquote, which is weird because I don't think Buffalo is our best win necessarily. I think Maryland's probably a better team. I think probably the other win.
Yeah.
Vatek's definitely a better team. Either way, losing that, even if it was, like, a kind of a weird, like, not as impactful as it, you know, probably at, you know, seems like it is in that metric, you'd still like to have them end up as, like, a tournament team and a nice non-conference victory.
Well, what I'm concerned about now, looking at the schedule, I mean, there's definitely wins to be had here if we just play up to our level of talent. The problem is, you know, when you look at, we have 4 ranked teams left. We could easily go 5-4 in this stretch and all the wins be against unranked teams.
Yeah, which would put us at 20-11. I think we'd probably need an ACC tournament win. Maybe
I think we need at least one, because honestly, like, if you go into the ACC tournament and your best win is Miami?
Vatek.
Yeah,
Miami,
like,
Buffalo.
Yeah, like, yeah, it would have to be like Miami, Louisville would have to be in there.
It's not a super strong resume.
No.
That being said, 5-4, that would put us, what, 9-9 in the ACC?
Yeah.
It depends on the bubble. The bubble, like, I don't have a great read for it so far.
I mean, it's weak. It's really weak, but it's just like last year. You know, last year, if Rhode Island hadn't won the A-10, we would have been in, and we wouldn't have, and we wouldn't be having all the conversations we've had, you know, in the 10 months since.
Yeah, it's tough. It's also tough, like, with these weak bubbles, because then you know, one thing being more weighted than the others, like, is a huge swing in terms of if you get in or not. So we will see. It's going to be another bumpy ride down the stretch here, as we've grown far too accustomed to.
100%. And I think last year, you know, I said, going into this, not too much longer, but more saying, you know, last year we had the quality wins, we just didn't have them on the road, and that's what was the difference between the 16 tournament and the 17 tournament. Was in 16, we had, you know, the road win at Duke. We had the UConn and Texas A&M wins in the Bahamas. Like, those wins were away from the Dome. We were able to tally those. Last year, our 3 best wins were, you know, in a, you know, 4-week stretch all at the Dome. and we weren't really able to do anything away. I think we went like 2-8 in true road games last year, which is pretty bad. And the only two wins were like, you know, furious comeback efforts against NC State and Wake. The same Wake team that beat us into the field, which I still don't understand, but whatever. So, yeah, I think this year, if we go 5-4 and we beat the five unranked teams, I don't think we're getting in. Even if we hit, you know, the 9-9 mark, I think we've got to – if you did that, you'd have to find a way to get an upset somewhere in the ACC tournament, because that resume would be largely kind of bereft of, you know, the real quality wins that have kind of buoyed our case in recent seasons.
You just reminded me that we didn't get in and Wake Forest did last year, yeah. And it bothers me all over again.
Because we beat them. them. And their
beat them, and our resumes were very close, and you would think head-to-head would mean a little bit more when that is the case. Alas.
It did not.
It is not.
Although, the same thing happened the year before, technically. Did Pitt sweep us, or did they go 2-1 against us?
I don't remember.
It was one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, it was Pitt, so they, aside from this year when Pitt is just the worst, they usually, yeah, they probably swept us.
Yeah. So if they swept us or even went 2-1 against us and we still got seeded better than they did as an at-large team that year. So just to provide some additional weird context, these types of things do happen occasionally, whether they are fair or not. I guess why don't we look a little bit ahead to Virginia, and then we can move on to some football stuff and some other things. And National Signing Day is coming up next week. For those confused as to how we're here again, quote unquote, it's because there are now two signing days. And this one is going to matter for Syracuse, not as much as the previous one, but nonetheless, still important.
It seems like there's some like decent intrigue down the stretch here, and it seems like we've gotten involved with guys like very late in the game and are actually getting results, which is nice.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. And again, like that's, I think we'll talk about that in the second half. But I'm excited to chat a little bit more about the recruiting front. Dan, before we get to that though, Virginia. We started mentioning the Hoos earlier. They're very good. They have not lost in quite a while. I'd argue, like you would, that they're the number one team in the nation. I can say, do you think we have a chance? Because I think we do. Where would you put the odds right now?
I think we have a decent chance. I, as I said before, like it's at the Dome. We know how to play them better than we know how to play a lot of teams that have like specific styles. I don't think we're going to be afraid of them. I mean, we lost by 7 at in Charlottesville a couple weeks ago. Frank Howard had an awesome game. He had a good game, inefficient game, but no one's really all that efficient against Virginia on defense. Chukwu had a nice game that he had that 16 rebound performance. So like our guys, I think there should be some confidence that they can match up with them and that they can play with them. We need more than 0 bench points, which was nice. The case last time, and hopefully no excited tweets about it from staff members at SU afterwards. I'm not sure if we should edit that out or not.
Just you just want to be ripping J's. You can
ripping J's.
Oh God.
We should probably not let Kyle Guy score 22 points on 14 shots.
Yeah,
preferable. They're very good. They play within themselves very well. They had more than 0 bench points. They actually had 18, 15 from Hunter. In there, I don't know that he's quite like a total nobody, but it wouldn't surprise me if that was like one of his best performances of the year. No, he's scored a bunch in other games too. That makes me feel better. So it's gonna be tough, but I do think we have a legitimate shot. I don't know if we have odds out yet. Usually, college basketball takes it's like day before day of.
Yeah.
But being at the Dome really helps, and you know, as we've learned in recent years, like getting those big Dome wins aren't everything. But at this point, we need just big wins in general, and this would put us on a really good path, especially because Virginia is like cruising to a one seed right now.
I mean, at this point, I'd be, and you look at the remaining schedule for them, I'd be shocked if they don't get a one seed, even if we did manage to knock them off. We're arguably one of the hardest games they have left. This Virginia team is very good, and it's not as dependent on, Not like dependent on one guy. I don't think they're ever dependent on one guy, but I will say, like, this is, I feel like this team is much more of a collective than like the Malcolm Brogdon teams or like the Parentes team. Like, I do feel like this this group is much more of a collective, and like Kyle Guy is obviously very good, but you know, he's not the end all be all, and there's so many guys on this team, you know, that can really aggravate you on both ends of the floor. So I think this Virginia team is going to be, you know, quite the opponent. Not really an easy out by any means. Not that we expected them to be, but you know, you look ahead at the schedule for them. Like, they could easily put together one of the better regular seasons in recent memory. You know, for a power conference team, where they're probably ending the regular season somewhere in the like 29-30 win range.
Yeah, I mean, they're already 21-1. And it's not like they haven't played anyone. Like, I was just going through their ACC games. Like, they've only won, they're undefeated in the ACC. They've only had three games within single digits, which was their first ACC game. They beat BC by one, which is a bizarre result considering everything else. And they beat us by seven at home. BC was at home too. And then at Duke, they had their first win at Cameron in a long time. They won by two. Everything else, like, and they played some good teams. They beat the hell out of Virginia Tech. They beat UNC by 12. They beat Clemson, who's very good 25. This year, by like 30, yeah, almost 30 points. They just beat Louisville by 10. In a,
how is
they,
Clemson, you know, this good, by the way?
I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, they don't
Blossom game left, and I was like, oh, okay, so Clemson's going to suck.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like. I mean, I think they were picked, like, what? They were picked in the bottom, like, quarter of the conference, I think, right?
100%.
I mean, I this was not the best way to open up. Like, how is Clemson good? And I opened up their box score against Virginia when they scored 36 points. Yeah. So that wasn't the answer.
How was Clemson bad that one time?
They're good because they have five guys scoring double digits. Talking about a collective, like, they just have a really nice, like, balanced roster overall. Like, I think that's just, like, there's not one guy that jumps off the page at you. Like, none of these guys are super household names. Right. But they just accrued a lot of impressive talent, and then they lost that on Zion Williamson, which is hilarious.
I mean,
I'm not thrilled he's going to Duke, though.
Fair. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm just kind of tired of the top players all going to Duke at this point.
When that happened, I was so much has happened since we last did this. I think we've both gone on one vacations.
Yeah.
yeah, I think I tried to weigh whether I would rather just have him go to Duke and bet on and just like let them like take up all that talent and just like write those names off as washes, or like bet that they won't figure it out, because that has happened with Duke a couple times in these last couple years. Or if I would have rather had him on Clemson and made Clemson like legitimately good, but Duke not quite as good, and then having to deal with him and then have to deal with Duke just being talented no matter what anyway, because they already have the other three guys. So yeah, I don't know.
I'd rather just take the L. I'd just rather just take the L against Duke. And
yeah,
then,
but the problem is that Clemson, like, are these guys, are they seniors? Like, I don't know anything about this Clemson team, except I've watched them multiple times, and they're, like, they're legitimately good. They play really hard, they close out games, except for this Virginia game, which was a disaster, but UVA is really good.
A couple of nice wins. They got the Miami at full strength, they got UNC that they pulled off the other day, they beat Florida earlier in the year. I mean,
all right, they're super veteran, which explains a lot.
Right.
Of their top five guys, three are juniors, two are seniors.
Oh, well.
So, yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah, I just kind of want Clemson to lose, like, in everything, so
I'm fine with that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine with them, like, not having nice things.
They'll be fine. They also don't need to be good at basketball. Like, come on.
Yeah. You definitely have enough of late.
Just read.
But yeah, I think Clemson to end the season sounded pretty awesome at the beginning, and now I'm not so sure. That said, you know, Clemson sticks around the top 15-20. Syracuse get a win against them. That one's at the Dome to end it. So yeah, maybe if Syracuse can, like, if they can't get any of those kind of upsets, whether it's against Duke or Virginia or whatever, or North Carolina, maybe they're able to beat Clemson at the Dome once again for the second time in, you know, 6-7 months.
Yeah. it did seem like it would have set itself up nicely for us, because, like, again, we thought Thompson was going to be bad, and BC was right before them. And, you know, who knows? We have Thompson at the Dome, which at least, so that helps. Because apparently that's, like, a somewhat weirdly hard place to play this year.
Yeah, I'm so sick and tired of talking about Clemson basketball. I just don't want to. All right, why don't we do a little halftime, then we can kind of pivot to the sport we usually talk about a little bit more.
Sounds good.
So, as Dan mentioned, we've both been on vacation recently. Dan was down in Austin at one point, and then I was in Italy for almost 2 weeks, which is very relaxing, and I feel much more recharged now. It was definitely a needed break from everything Syracuse, and apparently I picked the right games to miss in BC and Pitt. However, now that I'm back, Syracuse is losing, so if anyone wants to fund me to go back to Europe, feel free.
we'll definitely purchase you a ticket.
Run
the blog from Italy.
I saw that James was looking up tickets to send my ass back during the game. Looked like 800 was the best you were going to do for a one-way to Rome before the Virginia game.
We should have planned this out better.
We should have.
We should have bought, like, a while ago, just to see, in case it would have gone bad after, and, you know, maybe got it early enough where we could have done it on a refund.
I mean, I won't argue with it at this point. If SU loses, like, a couple in a row, we might have to make some travel plans. Anyway, Dan, what have you been drinking these last couple of weeks?
I have a decent amount. So I'm going to try to limit myself here. Unfortunately, when I was in Austin, I could not for the life of me find Jester King anywhere, which is weird because I went to a bunch of beer bars.
They don't do a lot of stuff on draft, I found down there. Like, I found their bottles.
We went to liquor stores. I couldn't find them. And then on Monday, when we were, like, just kind of hitting all the random stuff that we hadn't been able to do during the weekend, they were closed. Yeah. So I probably could have planned that out better, but we were, like, we went to San Antonio one day, so that kind of ate up most of that day, and then, like, we did a bunch of other stuff the other day. So, like, Monday was the day we were just, like, hitting, like, little things, and that was, like, oh, we'll see if we can go to the brewery, and they were closed that day. But I could not. We went to a liquor store at one point to buy other stuff, and I was like, oh, they'll probably have some here. Nope. None of the beer bars I went to, so it was tough. I didn't get any of that. So that was disappointing. I will have to go back to Austin just for that and other things. We didn't get to do everything we wanted. It's a really cool city. But did have some good stuff. Actually had something from one of your favorite spots. I had the mash and coconut from the brewery.
Yeah.
Which was really, really good.
Love that beer.
Awesome. I know I always, I mean, every time I say, like, you know, I've had a nice dark, like, I'm like a, you know, I preface it by saying it's not usually my thing, but, like, this is delicious. The coconut was really well used. I know coconut's kind of like a controversial flavor for some people. I love coconut, and this, you definitely got that, but it wasn't, like, you know, over the top. The mash flavor also made, like, an interesting, like, balance of the flavors. Really liked that. So that was good. Obviously not a Texas beer, but still quite good. I had a spirit animal from Blue Owl, which I think is a local brewery down there. This is now a couple weeks ago, so I'm trying to remember some stuff. That's an awesome micro. That was, I believe, a sour. Yes, it was a sour that was really good. Also, it was, like, kind of interesting. They had some. It was a dry hopped sour, which made for a pretty interesting flavor profile. I had a pecan porter, 512 pecan porter from 512 Brewing, which I think is also a local down there.
Yep.
Which was good. Another one, like a darker one, but some interesting flavors, which I found a lot of. I had a stash IPA from Independence Brewing, another local, I believe. Yep. Which was very solid, not, like, you know, anything crazy, but just a really rock-solid IPA. Santo by St. Arnold's. I'm trying to remember this. I think this was a more interesting one. Yeah, it was a Black Kolsch, which was really interesting. I know that's not, like, technically a thing, but definitely an interesting blend of styles. I guess that's just how they've, like, been describing it. But I had a Hopadio IPA from Carbach, which was really, really delicious, probably the best IPA I had down there.
I think that's one of the best IPAs I've had down there too, to be honest.
Yeah, really, really good. I was glad. That was, like, one of those where I wasn't quite sure I wanted another IPA, but I just kind of went with it. That's a Houston one. I don't remember if I had that. No, that was in Austin. I wasn't sure if that was Austin or San Antonio. I had a Pale Mosaic from Hops and Grain, which was good. And then I think the last one, which was back up here, that was interesting, is I had in Hoboken, I had a Grand Cru Winter Reserve from Flying Fish, which was a strong Belgian, and that was delicious. Just really, really full, aggressive flavors. So that was really good, and not a Texas beer. That is a Jersey beer.
Yeah. Seems like you hit most of the Texas breweries, other than Jester King, in terms
yeah,
of...
Yeah, I got, like, a pretty good sampling of the other ones, and, like, Jester King was, like, the one I was looking out for, so I was kind of flying blind on the others, but ended up with a pretty nice beer trip, even though that wasn't, like, a super focus. So, definitely happy with what we got.
Fair enough. For me, yeah, I was not on a super beer trip either. I definitely drank plenty of wine while I was in Italy, but did find plenty of beer, too. Including a couple bars that I felt like were just airlifted from Brooklyn and put right into the middle of both Rome and Florence. Had a Parrot Invasion IPA from Rebels Brewery. Pretty much all these are Italian breweries. That one was pretty good. Kind of some grapefruit notes. Definitely more of a West Coast style. They haven't gotten on the haze train over there just yet, which is good, in my opinion. Walked into one bar, and they happened to have Cantillon on tap. So had a classic Gousset from them. It's one of my it's arguably the best lambic on the market. From Ritual Lab, also another Italian brewery, had a Tupamaros. It was an IPA. What else did I have? I stopped at Brewdog over in Florence. Not that it's like a local spot, obviously, but they did try to highlight some local beer as well as their own. Had their Jackhammer IPA. Just felt like the whole, it was fine. Just felt like the whole experience a little too, like, Anglo-Americanized. Even though they were serving some Italian beers. One Italian brewery, Lover Beer, they had a sour ale called the Beer Brugna, and that one was really good. Had probably one of the better pills I've had in a while from Hilltop Brewery. It was a Gluck Pils. It was super good. It had, like, really nice... It was nice and light, but then also had, like, some really nice flavor and hoppy notes, despite being pretty light. Stopped in over at one brewery there. It's Archaea Brewery. Had their Hydra IPA. That was good. And then their kind of signature Bock that they had on draft. That was really it. It's a good spots. Found some good beers. Definitely happy I got to sample some of the Italian beer scene while also enjoying, again, plenty of wine while I was there.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it before you went. Like, definitely not what you would expect to look out for in Italy, but it's always cool to try some beers you probably almost definitely won't find here, since most of the imports we get are from, you know, Belgium or Germany or somewhere that's more beer-centric.
Yeah, and most of those, too, you're going to end up with, like, ones that are related to, like, the larger conglomerates.
Yeah, which is less exciting.
Yeah. But, yeah, fun scene. Definitely recommend it. A lot of cool bars. Anyone that goes to Italy, I have some great beer and wine picks for you if you're looking to do things. So, yeah. Looking at football now, pivoting back to Syracuse sports, which is, I guess, one of the topics that we talk about on this show. I guess we can talk about the coaching thing first. That was kind of a surprise, although shouldn't have been, I guess, because we're getting pretty close to signing day. Syracuse hired its quarterback coach. I know Dan and I have been talking about who that might be. We threw around a couple names of, like, you know, former spread quarterbacks, guys like that, in Mike Leach systems, Art Briles systems. Ends up it was none of those guys. It was Kirk Martin, who is the 10-year head coach of Manville.
Manville High School.
I kept writing Houston area. I kept writing Marvel for some reason.
Marvel High School.
we hired
very
Iron Man.
Interesting assortment of players.
But yeah, he assembled like an 108 and like 25 record while he was down there. Played for two national titles. Team went 14-1 this year. Kind of established a pretty nice recruiting base for TCU, A&M, Texas Tech. A lot of the other schools, they're about probably like 25, 30 minutes south of like downtown Houston.
They have a bunch of kids going to A&M.
Hotbed down there for sure. And I know like the one hang up that some people have, and I can't blame them for it, is the nepotism part of it. For those who didn't see in the article and kind of in some of the Twitter chatter, Martin is the father of Dino Babers' son-in-law. So obviously, like, that's a little bit of a connection. But if you look at his credentials, you look at the fact that, you know, A&M fans, when it was first announced that Martin was leaving, and then we found out the next day that he was headed to Syracuse, a bunch of them thought he might have been headed to UT. He was mentioned kind of as a potential rising coach around Texas to join one of the programs down there in the Big 12. So, like,
I think you saw Arizona fans also thought he might be going there. So yeah. He wasn't like an unknown commodity by any means.
Yeah. So like he has the creds. And then, you know, as we kind of talked about on the site and talked about on Twitter and in the comments, like, the big advantage here is that, like, you look at the fact that we jumped into Texas this year. We got Chance Amy. We got Trey Allison. It's obvious that while we can get fast guys from Michigan, fast guys from New York and D.C. and even Florida, like, a lot of those guys haven't played in this sort of system. If you're going to go down to Texas, you're going to find guys who you can quickly plug into this system, and they know it, and you can get rid of that kind of, you know, 1 to 2 year ramp that a lot of Syracuse's players have had to deal with, you know, since Dino Babers arrived. And that's not Babers' fault necessarily. It's just kind of how it goes. If you're not at a Texas school or an Oklahoma school, it's like there's not necessarily the same guarantees that you're going to have those level of athletes and the guys playing in that sort of system. So I commend him for kind of trying not to skip a few steps, but to make the next few steps easier on him, and then also make it easier for Syracuse to be able to recruit, you know, more players from spread offenses and air raids and more guys from Texas. Because obviously now with Martin, a guy who knows the landscape down there, knows the top schools, is from one of the top schools, and now has a pretty solid pipeline into that area. And like, Houston's obviously a huge hotbed. This definitely kind of escalates where we can go, I think, in terms of, you know, how far this offense can take us.
Yeah, it's a very interesting hire. It's interesting because I think we've talked at length about, like, the Texas thing, which we didn't know that the school was totally committing to. Like, you couldn't really tell if, like, we saw a spot with Chance Amy and
Trey Allison.
Trey Allison. And, you know, they were both in the same area, so it was like, you know, you could recruit them both at the same time. But it was hard to tell, like, whether those were two one-offs. We've gotten, like, a Texas kid in a couple different classes before, and it was just like, it was always like a weird spot where it's like, oh, there was mutual interest here for whatever reason. The fact that Babers' system is a very comfortable fit for Texas players, because, like you said, like, that whole state is so dedicated to the spread at this point. And especially when you consider a Houston area coach and school, obviously the nearest big Power 5 program to there is A&M, which has now kind of gone away from things. We'll have to see what Jimbo Fisher's program looks like first.
He's going pro-style.
He's pro-style coach. He's notable, like a famous pro-style coach. Now, at this point in college football, like, there's no true pro-style. Like, Stanford's probably the closest, but there's like everyone has spread concepts. Everything's like a kind of a blend at this point. Even in the NFL, like, no one's running, you know, smash mouth I formation every play. Like, there are spread concepts everywhere, but Baylor is obviously still running like some very, like, they haven't totally gone away from the Bryles stuff because that would have been very jarring. Texas is obviously a spread team. Texas Tech's obviously a spread team. So for A&M to kind of vacate that area as like a true spread program, and for us to poach one of the best high school coaches from that area, especially in a place like Texas where the high school coach like fraternity is such a big thing down there, you can't really overvalue it. So by taking a guy like this who has connections to everyone else in that area and his own school, which was producing, I think we looked it up yesterday, they had like how many kids going to FBS to Power 5 schools?
It was at least like eight? Six or seven. Yeah, it was like, yeah. Yeah, like six, seven, eight, like kids just going to P5 schools alone, like never mind all the kids going to, you know, your like Conference USA schools.
I think it was like 12 total going to FBS, which is impressive. So obviously we're not going to go and become the Houston area Power 5 school. We're not going to go beat out A&M for a bunch of these kids. What we can do is if you battle with Houston for some of their top kids and you battle for SMU's top kids and you fight with Texas Tech for a kid here and there and, you know, maybe beat out Texas for a kid because he's their plan B and we're their plan A, or they're our plan A, you know what I mean. that's when you can start to kind of really build depth in that area, because Texas, doesn't get – it started to from the SEC for a bit, and that's kind of fallen off the wayside. There was a good article – I forgot where. I wrote about it recently. There was a good article where they talked to some coaches in the area, and, like, the SEC has kind of retreated a little bit. Like, right when A&M joined, it was a big push there from a lot of schools, and now Texas is starting to, you know, reassert itself with Tom Herman there. But I think there's an opening there. Like, Florida gets mined by everybody. And Florida, we're going to go to. That's always going to be, like, arguably our main spot. And we're always going to take the couple kids in New York. And then Jersey, Pennsylvania, that whole area. This year, actually, it's interesting because Texas is one of the only three schools, three states that we have multiple players from, including with Florida and New York. But I think that Texas is still relatively unmined because it's not as compact as Florida. And the Florida, like, the kids are all from, like, these very specific spots.
Well, it's also system-specific. Like,
and it's system-specific.
Like, that's the thing. Like, Florida has, like, plenty of spread teams, plenty of air raid teams, but it has a ton of pro-style teams. Like, that, there are just a lot of – there's a lot more variance, and those guys are probably – it's not that they're better athletes than the players in Texas, but you're probably going to have a larger collection of just pure athletes there.
Yep.
And guys
Texas, you're getting plug-and-play.
Yeah, you're getting plug-and-play football players. Concepts.
Yes, yeah. Like, which getting, is nice.
No, it's totally nice. It definitely makes it easier for us. And again, it's not really to decry Florida players or Texas players, to be honest. It's just more to point out, like, for a team like us, like, while the Florida players are great, and obviously we've had a ton of success with those guys, plugging in the Texas players is going to be a lot easier. I know you mentioned SMU and Houston. Like, well, like, this year we flipped, even without Martin on staff, we flipped a kid from Houston and a kid from SMU, you know, right, in the final week before the early signing period. So I would definitely assume that going forward, and I know a bunch of recruiting experts said, you know, where before Martin was going to Syracuse, they said, like, you know, wherever Martin goes, he's probably going to be able to bring, you know, whether it's this year or in the coming years, bring some kids with him. I mean, I'm cool with it, and I'm especially cool with it if we're going to bring kids from, you know, again, his former school that was producing, you know, at a pretty solid clip in terms of P5 kids and just FBS kids in general. I mean, there aren't that many schools countrywide that are going to be able to give you 10 to 12, you know, FBS players in a given year.
The question is, like, how will he be with the quarterbacks, which is obviously a huge thing for us. I think it helps that, you know, we have Babers in place. So he, you know, Babers is going to be doing a lot of the coaching himself. But, you know, his son is a quarterback. I think he's going to, North Texas?
Yeah. And he threw for, like, 3,300 yards and 39 touchdowns last year.
And he's also going to play for an air raid system under who's the North Texas coach now? Is it it's one of the former TCU offensive coordinators.
Seth
Luttrell. Who I think was the co-OC with Sonny Cumbie.
That sounds right.
No, never mind. He was not. He was at UNC. As assistant head coach. Who am I thinking of? Well, let me look up the random TCU coaching staff from, like, 2015.
Was it Josh Fuente? Josh Fuente was already gone.
Yeah.
At that point.
This is, I feel dumb, and then I realize, oh, this is pretty on brand for this podcast.
This is exactly what this podcast does.
Doug Meacham.
Ah.
Doug Meacham and Sonny Cumbie. Doug Meacham is now the dot, like, that giant pay bump to do be the OC at Kansas, and is not going to be there much longer because that old staff's going to get fired after next year.
Oh, yeah.
It's not really his fault. And then Sonny Cumbie is still at TCU. He's now, like, I think he's the only OC now. Anyway, Seth Luttrell, who was at UNC, has done a very nice job there. But again, they're another air raid. I mean, they're very much a Texas-style school. So the fact that his son's a quarterback, the fact that that school produces quarterbacks in general and produces a ton of talent, I think, you can reasonably assume that he will be at least a pretty good quarterback coach, and the recruiting aspect is huge. And the fact that we have Babers overseeing the offense, like, makes me a little less worried than if we were, like, you know, handing over some huge part of the defense or the offensive line to a guy who didn't really have experience there. As silly as that sounds, because quarterback's the most important position, I think, you know, there's more focus there, and obviously Babers knows what he wants out of that position as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you hit it on the head there. Like, Babers can supervise kind of where that all goes, and then I do feel like bringing him in is going to be able to help these guys along. I think while we were happy about Chance Amy, obviously we were wondering how he was going to fit in with, you know, being a dual threat and Babers not really being like a huge dual threat proponent. Obviously, Tommy DeVito is much closer to a pro style passer. He's obviously got a big arm, and he's someone who, you know, just a little bit of coaching, a little bit of coaxing from Martin, you know, that should really do him a whole lot of good. That's not to say that Sean Lewis was a bad quarterback coach by any means, but, you know, I think that having Martin in there could end up bringing some better results for us in terms of DeVito's development. Because obviously, again, like, DeVito's a big arm. We liked what he was able to do in high school, but what he was doing in high school for a New Jersey program that wasn't necessarily running, you know, 85, 90 plays a game, there has to be a little bit of a ramp up from that to what he needs to do in this system. And I think having a coach, you know, kind of that well-versed in developing much younger talent and turning them into, you know, potential D1 players, I think that's gonna do DeVito a whole, you know, world of good.
Yep, and it also helps that he has a whole another year to hopefully be groomed, and hopefully we'll see him in actual play, you know, on the field this year, but in situations that aren't, like, super pressure-packed. So I think this is absolutely, like, the timing, not with this coaching change specifically, but the timing with DeVito and everything has worked out quite well. I mean, we talked about how advantageous our quarterback situation was heading into last year, and obviously it doesn't, you know, that doesn't really factor in if Dungy continues to get hurt. Obviously, it was different issues this year. But hopefully, if Dungy can stay healthy next year and we can get some work for DeVito, I think this whole process kind of works itself out about as well as you could have hoped for a quarterback transition between, like, one of, you know, whatever happens with Dungy from here forward, he's one of the best quarterbacks we've ever had, and then one of the biggest quarterback recruits we've ever had.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, it's a nice transition from one to the other. And again, a guy like Martin and obviously having Babers in there both set the stage for us pretty well. Looking ahead to signing day, though, obviously, you know, we talked about guys like Chance Amy who are already in the door. There are a few players still left out there. I think we have, what is it? I think we have 6 spots left available. When you look at the inbound transfers that have come in, I know we had, you know, a really nice commit the other day in Jarvion Howard from down in Mississippi. If he signs, Dan, does that give you any kind of pause about, like, the running back situation that we have right now? I mean, we have Abdul Adams from Oklahoma, who won't be able to play this year, but he'll play in 2019.
And he is exciting.
Yeah, he is very exciting. We have, you know, Jarvion Howard just committed. He's a high 3-star guy with some SEC offers.
Both of his in-state power programs from Mississippi were on him.
Yeah, so he's a quality player and a guy who's, I mean, I'd be surprised at this point if he signs elsewhere next week. He said he's going to sign with SU on Thursday. But then the rest of it, like, we have Akeem Dixon's been, you know, committed verbally since April, May. And he hasn't really offered much of an update. He's not really active on social media. Juwar Jordan from Arizona. I don't believe he's visited. I know he's gotten some big offers. I really don't know what's going to happen there. And then the big other big name out there, you know, we have, is it like Mikhail? Are we just calling him that?
I'm not sure.
Let's go with Mikhail. Let's go.
I don't think it's just Michael.
Could be.
It could be. I hate, like, mispronouncing these names. It's the 4-star running back Salahuddin out of Washington D.C. who seems like he's a pit lean at this point, but he is visiting. Or did he just visit? He just went on his visit last week, right? I think.
Yeah, he just went on his visit last week. I'd very much like him not to go to Pitt just because I don't want to see him. If he's not going to go to Syracuse, I'd rather he just went to USC where he was originally committed.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
But there are some connections.
Like, Pitt and UNC are the other ones that have done visits, so.
Yeah, we were probably going to see him either way. Although, no, we weren't. If we went to UNC, we wouldn't have seen him.
No, because we played them this year. And, well, no, he would. Yeah, I guess we could see him this year, technically, if he went there.
True.
But it doesn't sound like they have a, it sounds like Pitt is like the main one. Now, all that being said, like, you know, this per the 24/7 crystal ball, and that thing is right a lot of the time. It is definitely not right all the time. It sounded like he had a good visit. He has a previous relationship with Abdul Adams, who are both from D.C., but they also play the same position, so I don't know what that means. We also just had another, as you said, Jarvan Howard, also a running back.
Salhuden also went to the same high school as Ed Hendricks, and I think Dre Sisco used to go there. No, Dre Sisco went to school in New York. There was somebody else on the roster that used to go to his high school.
Yeah, so there are connections. I would certainly take him. I think we would take him as well. He's, you know, it seems like our strategy with taking running backs is like we'll find a way to use them. It's not necessarily going to be like it's not, we don't have to necessarily worry about taking like a bunch of running backs in the class because some of them could be receivers, some of them could be, you know, who knows? Like we're going to get creative. That's been Baber's MO since he got here. I think with a talent like that, if you can get him, you definitely take him. I do wonder if taking Howard means that we don't think we're in the running for him. But it could not. Like, that could just be we were going to take both of them if we can. So it'll be interesting. It sounds like Pitt is the favorite, but nothing is certain until signing day. So either way, I think our running back situation has gotten a lot stronger in the last couple of weeks, especially with Abdul Adams, who it's a little interesting that he left Oklahoma. I know he wasn't getting a ton of use there, but they, you know, he was matriculating up today. I mean, he was getting some looks, and he definitely had a little bit of a role in that offense already, and he's obviously young, but man, that kid can fly, and I cannot wait to see him play starting in 2019.
Yeah, in 2019, other than, you know, Cody Conway would be the only guy graduating behind a very veteran offensive line. And, I mean, this is what, you know, what you and I talked about, and it's what we were alluding to earlier. Like, when you look at how the development of everybody comes along, like, 2019, you've got DeVito probably in his first year as starter, but behind a veteran offensive line, most of whom would be juniors and seniors. You'd have a lot of wide receivers who spent all of 2018 kind of getting acclimated with a senior quarterback at the time in Dungy. You got running backs, you know, between Adams and, you know, Strickland would be gone, but Mo Neal, no matter where he would play, like, there's a lot to like about 2019, and even more so now with him, and the other Michigan State transfer kid from who's a former four-star at receiver. Like, there's definitely... 2019 does look very promising. I just hope we're not... I hope we don't have to wait for 2019, though, for, like, the good things to start happening, because while you and I have patience, and obviously, like, a lot of other fans do too, like, there's plenty of fans that don't. And, you know, you can only do so much as a coach and as a program when, you know, places have empty and nobody's really buying in because they see, you know, stagnation in terms of wins, even if the quality of play is obviously better.
Yeah, it would definitely be a tough spot if we don't make some, like, you know, making a bowl next year should be attainable and is definitely needs to be a very, very strong focus. And then you'll start to win some people back, and then 2019 could be exciting. I do think, like, it all depends on context, and you know, we've seen so many seasons that derail from injuries and just from weird stuff like that. But there are definitely reasons to be excited for years down the line, even though 2018 I think we're all pretty excited for as well, at least on our side here. I am now watching Abdul Adams highlights from his game in Baylor, which is when he had the 99-yard touchdown run from literally he took a handoff on like an inside zone play from the one, and just I know Baylor's defense was hot garbage this year, but he just absolutely he makes like two guys miss and then it explodes and just glides up the field. It's beautiful, and hopefully he does that in the dome in a couple short years.
Who knows? Yeah, maybe we promised him 44. I guess we'll find out soon enough.
That would be a lot, but whatever works.
Yeah, I'm fine with it at this point. One other name I wanted to mention in terms of targets for National Signing Day before we kind of wrap up here. Strong side defensive end, Caleb Okechukwu. Be weird to have a Chukwu and an Okechukwu in the athletic department. But
very Pokemon-esque.
Okechukwu is the evolved form. I found him in the Pascal region, and then I brought him over to Syracuse. Anyway, that's some inside baseball. or not baseball, as the case may be. Okechukwu, like I said, strong side defensive end. He's 6'4", 240, from D.C., St. John's College. So I'm sure he knows some of the other D.C. guys on the team. Those are really the big names. Dan, have you seen anybody else in terms of, like, names tossed around? I feel like that was everything I've noticed. It doesn't mean that somebody else can't come along.
I think we have Fitzroy Gardner was here on that same visit, who is a linebacker, defensive end, type player from Armwood down in Florida, which is a school that puts out a lot of players. He was here on that same visit weekend as Okechukwu and, unfortunately, what was supposed to be Devin Winters, who tragically passed away before that. He made it up, which is just unbelievably sad. He's still listed on the visit thing, which is the only reason I brought it up. I started to say it, and then I was like, oh, no, that was that guy. He's still listed on our visit list, unfortunately. But he was supposed to have been here last weekend as well. He is like a, you know, looks like a linebacker, defensive end hybrid. He's, you know, 6'3", 215, so I don't know if the plan would be to keep him at the end or linebacker to bulk him up. Seems like most of those guys end up getting bulked up and playing off the edge. But he is us, and he visits Maryland this weekend. So it sounds like we're the two main contenders there. But he could definitely be another option to keep an eye on. He had some big sack totals in high school, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'd always take that. I'll take, at this point, I think, you know, I know I've said this on the site and elsewhere, like, defensive line's kind of our big focus here. You know, going into, I think, signing day. Obviously, we haven't, like, gotten a ton of them. We haven't gotten any to this point. But just in terms of, like, I don't know what happened this cycle, and I'm not, like, criticizing the staff for it, but I do think, like, the defensive lineman we pursued, it just didn't work out. And it's obviously, like, when a lot of classes, you know, two-thirds of the guys sign on the early signing day, you kind of end up playing a little bit of catch-up here, you know, in the last month and a half. So hopefully we can close on a defensive lineman or two. We really don't have a lot of depth there, so it'd be great to add something. I don't really know what the JUCO situation looks like, but I guess we had to go down that well. We could. Grad transfers, too. I'm sure there's going to be at least a few of those out there. And we've done some work in terms of adding those guys late. So, like I said, we have 6 scholarships remaining. I think we fill at least 3 to 4 of them on National Signing Day, but they could leave a couple spots extra that we can use for some late additions that hopefully make some immediate impacts.
Yeah, we talked about it before. With D-line, like, it seems like that's a position where you often find, like, those late transfers and those junior college kids that you can add late. So hopefully we get some more reinforcements on that end. We had them last year, obviously, which helped out. But that's a spot where you can never use too much depth.
Too true. All right, Dan, I think that's a good place to end it for this week.
Yes, I look forward to getting to bed because it is now past midnight. But we could not wait another week without trying to give our beloved listeners the podcast content they crave.
Yeah, all 5 of you. I'm sure you love this show. That was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, on whatever other service you listen to us on. We've got Virginia on Saturday. Got Louisville on Monday before the next show. So should be an eventful few days. Hopefully Syracuse doesn't find itself in a bubble purgatory by the time we talk next, Dan.
Yes, sounds good.
And on that note, go Orange.
Go Orange.